Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The pictures have got small.
Your first one's on us.
Welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Rigadonna, and with me, as always...
Richie Byrne. How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. It's week three. We've been getting together. Yeah.
I said we wouldn't last a week and a half, but here we are.
Look at us now.
What, how was your weekend? Before we start, how was your weekend?
It was great. I didn't even know it was the weekend. It's kind of the opposite right now, because we work during the week now, doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And the weekends were not up.
You know what I realized on Saturday? Hi, Cynthia. On Saturday was 3 weeks since I got paid anything.
Wow.
Sunday, I did a guest spot the next night. 3 weeks ago Sunday, I did a guest spot at Governor's. It's the last time I've performed. I can't remember the last time I went 3 weeks without performing.
Wow. You know? Dude, it's crazy to think about that.
I was probably in my early 20s. That's so weird.
Yeah, this is like the...
You know, it's like 10 years now.
It's like the... I'll let you get away with that math.
all right.
So, the way we start every show...
Yeah, we're going to get this out of the way. Here's what we're doing, guys. It's Monday, and that means it's Corona Monday. It's good. Corona.
It used to be something that happened at a bar.
Yes.
You know, Corona's half off.
Yeah, you got like half price with a lime. But... every Monday, because we had Jimmy Cano on last week, and he was so great, and everybody loved hearing from him. Jimmy actually was in the hospital from his hospital bed, was on. He had dealt with coronavirus. He is home now. And it got such great response that we decided every Monday we will dedicate stories to the coronavirus. So we have a great show today. We have a doctor on the show, and we have from China.
From ground zero.
Joel's father, the wild card.
The wild card. I don't know what's more dangerous, the fact he's in China or it's Joel's dad.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of jokes there. So that's what we're doing today. It's a little different show, but not really. And but Mark and I need to get the joke and the drinks out of the way. So what are you drinking, brother?
I have. So this is kind of cool because it's an adult beverage. It's an adult beverage, but part of the recipe was from my kids, though.
Really?
This is very cool. I did a Tito's and soda, but then what they did is they made Daddy ice cubes with Gatorade. That way, I get the hangover juice with my drink.
There you go.
Cheers, Duke and Axel.
Like what? Yeah. What? Duke and Axel kicking it, going old school. What? what was it you got me on New Year's Eve? You told me to pick up. That's good for that.
Oh, Pedialyte.
Pedialyte
is the
hangover.
It's the best. And if you make a drink with Pedialyte, you're putting in electrolytes vodka.
So I'm going vodka today.
We're both vodka tonight.
Vodka on the rocks.
Ah, nice. So, but are your rocks made out of Gatorade?
My rocks are made out of human flesh.
Oh, beautiful.
What do you mean in the glass? So what's your joke, brother? You got a joke for me today?
Yeah. So hanging out at a clubhouse out on a golf course, and a woman comes running in. She comes running. She goes, oh, my God, I got stung by a bee. I got stung by a bee. And there was a doctor sitting there, and the doctor turns to her and says, where'd you get stung? And she goes, between the first and second hole. And he goes, ooh, you got to widen your stance.
That's a good one. I like
silly,
that.
But...
Okay, and one other thing we're going to do today before we start. Unfortunately, a true legend in the comedy world passed away on Saturday night into Sunday morning. If you'd ever been to Dangerfields, if you're a comic and you worked there, if you ever went there, the waiter, Chario Antonio,
he's been there forever.
Day one. And there he is there. We took that picture March 3rd, Mark. Actually, that was...
He lost quite a bit of weight.
What am I talking about? March 11th. And Chario was a great, great guy. He'd been there for 50 years. He he used to – I had not gotten to Dangerfields for a couple of years, and I only went back a few months ago. And I'm really glad I did, because I got to really get back in contact with Chario and see him. And the last few months, I would be doing my show. And because if you go on like a Tuesday night, sometimes there's only like 6-7 people in the audience. So you work a lot of new stuff. Mark knows what I'm talking about. Yep. So I'd be on stage and Chario would be the only waiter. So I'd start making fun of him. And I'd be like, man, you're old. Look at how old it is. And then I would bring him on stage and he would tell terrible old jokes. And love it. And he thought it was the greatest thing. He thought it was the greatest thing. A couple of months ago, Mark, I actually said he was working, and I'm just going, man, how fucking slow can you be? You know, like I'm on, and I'm going, look at you, look at this. Jesus, you're old. Oh my God. And I just kept doing it, and finally he just looked up, and with that, he was from Greece. He was Greek, and with that Greek accent, he just looked up at me, and he goes, "Fuck you." The audience went crazy. And after the show, he comes up, he goes, "I got the biggest laugh of the night. I got the biggest laugh of the night." And he was really excited about it. And I'm glad I gave him that moment, you know, because he really loved that. And
something about him that I always loved is, A, if you ever watched a Rodney Dangerfield comedy special,
he's there.
He's been in this country for 200 years, and he still had a horrible accent you can barely understand. The other thing is he did something, and I don't know if this is, you know, too appropriate to say about someone who just passed, but he embraced his age, because you know how older people, they tend to, like, when they walk, they seem to let out a little gas.
Oh, no, nobody could fart like Chario.
He would crop dust the audience, the loudest farts you've ever heard.
Yeah.
He would lift his leg up right in front of the stage and shake it out.
You know how I knew he was getting old? In the last few years, he wasn't doing that as much. Like, he couldn't.
Well, he probably had a few accidents.
But he leaves behind a wife and two kids. We lost Pete Michaels last week, and that was devastating to me. And now we lost Chario. 6 days later, and 5-6 days later. So it's been a tough week, people. And neither one was coronavirus. They were both heart. But
I
don't know what to say, except God bless you, Chario. Hopefully he's up there telling some really bad jokes to St. Peter.
He was St. Peter's older brother, so.
All right. Well, let's get on with the show.
All right. Let's move it forward.
Go ahead, man.
I was going to say we have two very special guests today.
Very special guest. Our first guest is a very, very good friend of mine. He's somebody I owe a lot to. He operated on my dad, saved his leg. They thought they were going to take my dad's leg, and this guy came in. I wrote Dr. Oz and said, they want to take my dad's leg. And Oz wrote me and said, get Nick Morrissey. And I called him. And he went in, and he saw my dad, and he goes, yeah, I can save the leg.
That's awesome.
Dude. And he's an amazing guy. From there, we became very good friends. And he's been working it. He's right there. He's at the hospital every day dealing with this. And we thought it'd be great to have him on. He's the associate professor of surgery at Columbia University Medical Center. Give it up for Dr. Nicholas Morrissey.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. Thanks.
You're working hard.
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead. Tell the audience basically what your week is like, what your day is like, what's going on.
Yeah. So the big change is working different, right? So you know my life before. I was a vascular surgeon. I operate.
Amazing surgeon. Right.
4.5 days a week. I see patients, and the operating room is where I live, and do 15 or 20 cases a week. You know, when this started coming, we knew it was going to be big. In the last about 3 weeks, we've converted the vast majority of our operating rooms into intensive care units. And
wow, the operating rooms.
Yeah, the operating rooms. So where my theater, where I do my thing, is now a place where I go do my thing. But instead of having one patient and a scalpel and instruments, there are four patients with ventilators. And so they're all ICUs. And and significant parts of the hospital have been converted to ICUs to manage the sickest of the sick patients. So we changed jobs a little bit too. We went from being surgeons to being intensive care unit doctors, almost like proteges of our critical care doctors who are teaching us and reminding us, and, you know, getting us back up to speed on things like taking care of ventilators, taking care of medications and things like that.
Right.
And one of the other things we do is, like, last night I worked overnight with some of my residents, and we were sort of like a mobile surgical unit. And when these patients need things like, we got to put catheters in their veins to give them medications to keep their hearts going and stuff, we get a call on our phone and we go there with our bag, and my residents and I, we put in catheters and do that. I'm just really, really proud of the people that I work with, my residents, all the docs, the entire institution, because they really, really rallied and turned the place into a whole different thing. But that's how things have changed.
So with, oh, there we go, Christiane, with a nice compliment.
Thank you, Nick, for all you do and working on the front line.
How much more crowded is it than you anticipated?
It's interesting. It's an eerie kind of a thing, because when you walk around the hospital, you don't necessarily get the sense of an overwhelming crowd. But when you go to the places where that used to be you recognized for a certain thing, they're different. So, in other words, like I said, an operating room, which, you know, I was looking through the door the other night and I looked up and I saw the operating room lights were sort of, they were almost mothballed. They were out of the picture. They weren't relevant anymore because we had this whole other focus. So there's no question that the mood is very different and it's on everybody's mind. And I won't say it's somber. It's a mood of really everybody's in this and they're fighting and they're working really hard. I mean, from the people that clean the rooms who are just as much at risk, perhaps as we are, to the nurses who are absolutely incredible, the greatest frontline workers, they're in there all the time, to my residents who have just sort of stepped up and rolled up their sleeves, not literally because you have to have everything covered, but everybody's just,
you know, we last week we had a friend of ours, Jimmy Canizzaro, on, and he had the virus and he was in the hospital in Brooklyn, and he said I don't think he said this on our show, but he said it to me later, that if you asked him to name someone that worked on him, he wouldn't be able to do it because people came in and they were completely covered from head to toe. So he never really saw faces, which, yeah, I guess you don't think about that every doctor, every nurse that walks through the door has got to be covered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
especially when on the ventilator, right? And then they're usually sedated pretty heavily when they're on the ventilator because you don't want them. And so that's to me one of the most tragic parts is the loneliness of these folks because they can't get visitors.
Right.
Because
God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But we have a system. We actually have there's a person on each shift in the ICU that's in charge of like family relations and being in contact with the family and relaying messages and things like that. So, you know, we sort of follow everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be so hard for the family. I thought of that. My friend Jimmy's wife, Jenna, well, first of all, she was quarantined at home, which people don't think about. If someone's sick, whoever they were living with can't go, they couldn't go to the hospital anyway. They might have the virus.
Right.
Well, on top of it, you go to the hospital, you get the virus. So she, you know, she was in hell dealing with the fact that he was there. And she said the same thing. They were very good about keeping in contact with her. And I think that's amazing. And things you don't think about with nurses and doctors, that they're not only in the front lines, but they have to think about the people back home.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I don't go to visit my kids for the last 3 weeks. I FaceTime with them every day.
Right.
I have colleagues who are.
Can I just say Mark's very jealous of you right now?
If you need any help, I'll be there. I have 3 weeks with that's all I do.
Yeah, Mark's been with his boys. Mark has two boys, so.
I'm watching my wife try to wrangle them out of the room as I'm in here. They're trying to come in to see what I'm doing. They're 3 or 4 and 5, so they're like trying to get in and see what they know that my computer is called the podcast station and to leave me alone I'm on it.
How long before this really hit were you guys preparing? Did you see it being this bad? Did you think it was going to be worse? What were there meetings about it? Hey, here's what's going to happen. Or was it more, wow, this is getting worse than we thought?
You know, it's hard to say when we started talking about it. It probably goes back well into February. I remember driving somewhere on March 1st. And I remember, because I don't usually drive, but I was listening to the radio. And the big thing on the news on March 1st was that the first case in New York was getting tested to see if somebody had it. So that's a month ago, and we're up to 100-something thousand cases. So it rolled really fast. I think we all knew it was coming, and I think there was a plan in place based on what the projected needs would be. And I think that's why they were able to execute it on the level of the hospital and the institution so quickly. You know, to convert these rooms so fast so that one day they're an operating room, the next day they're an ICU, and then a day later they're full, that's a pretty phenomenal feat.
Yeah,
there was a lot of anticipation. I don't think there was an expectation of the exact magnitude, but I think everybody knew it had the potential to be big.
Right. And have you seen people go home though? Have you seen patients get better?
So we don't. One of the things about sort of our roles is that we don't have a tremendous amount of continuity.
That's true. Right.
But we're taking care of the folks in the ICU, and the ICU patients, they do tend to get better and leave, but it takes a long time with this disease. Whereas if you're on a ventilator in most types of diseases, you're on for 3 or 4 days. The coronavirus disease in the lungs causes people to require like 2 weeks on the ventilator. So you may not, but people are recovering. If you look at the statistics online, you know, most people do recover. But there's enough of a number of people who really suffer badly that it makes the magnitude of this really bad.
Right.
Go ahead, Mark. I was going to say, there's part of this, it kind of feels like the book I Am Legend. You know, we're part of it, like from an outsider of New York City. I lived there for a long time, but now I'm not living there. I kind of feel like that it must have that kind of vibe, that it's like, I feel like the end of the world almost vibe.
You know, it is like that. I, when I was a fellow training in 2001, when 9/11, actually, I was my first year in practice, 9/11. And that was the day that, you know, everybody's head was like that surreal, where are we kind of a thing. This is kind of like that. And it's not slow motion, but it's more prolonged. It's like every day in some ways is like that. It's the thing that's on everybody's mind. And so and you look outside, the streets are empty. And, it's a whole different world. It's a very surreal feeling. I don't think people that are working are not, at least the ones that I work with on a regular basis, they're tired, but people are not getting discouraged. They're hanging in there pretty well.
Yeah. That's interesting. Now you're military too, right?
In the past, I was in the reserves. Yeah.
You're in the reserves. And did you feel any training from that has helped you with this, to what to expect or?
Yeah, because we did a lot of training on things like mass casualties. We did training on things like triage.
Because right? It sounds almost like a MASH type of setup, but with, you know,
higher tech.
Yeah.
High tech MASH.
Yeah, I think in the sense that you're and as people have used this term when they've talked about this, that you're fighting with the army you have and not the one you want. You just gotta do with what you have. And yeah, there's a lot of cobbling things together in a way like you do it in the military. But it's been quite effective so far.
Has anyone applauded you yet? Have you had any of that where, people applaud at the different hospitals and things like that? Have you seen any of that? Or
we've seen, like, when I go out of the hospital onto Broadway before I head down to the subway, there's been people out there with signs. My kids participate in that 7 o'clock at night thing, and they clap out the window and they send me videos of that. And I've actually been able to hear it a few times. I think it's incredible.
Wow.
All around the city, people at 7 o'clock for 2 minutes. And it's really something.
That's great.
Cool. Yeah. You know, listen, on Facebook and stuff, you know, all my friends and people that I've grown up with, I get texts all the time checking on my well-being and thanking me. And, I feel very safe. I know I'm exposed a lot, especially now that we're dealing with the patients one-on-one. But we have plenty of protective equipment. And we studied again how to use it, because you don't always use it all the time, and made sure we were good at it. I know I'm exposed on a continuous basis, but I feel healthy. I feel strong. And
I know I've been following you on Facebook, and I know you're still running a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's my COVID test. I told you, right?
Yeah. As long as you can run, you're breathing.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm in a lot of trouble then. I've had this virus for about 5 years, Nick. How long do you see this? Not that you're an expert in that end, but how long do you see this going? You know, all of a sudden we're at April 30th, and we know that that's probably not going to be the end. And, Cuomo talked today that we're kind of leveling off, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to put this on you, but what do you...
But I think it's a question that everybody should be asking themselves and look at the data, look at the numbers. I look at that. There's Johns Hopkins has this a tally that if you go to the Johns Hopkins public health website, there's a thing that puts the worldwide cases in the cases, and it refreshes every hour. And you can see that I think the numbers are leveling a little bit. And I think in New York, there is going to, you know, there has been a bit of a change. You know, the number of admissions to the ICUs are down. The number of discharges are going up. So, and if you look at other countries who have gone through it, Italy being, I think, the worst in terms of the sustained peak.
Right. As far as we know, because we don't believe China. But.
That's true. I think they probably had a lot more deaths than they said. But I think there's reason to believe that come April 30th, we may be on a downslope in terms of new cases. And we may start to be able to, you know, bring some things back to normal. One of the things that I think is key, people want to go back to work. They want to go back to life. There's going to start to be some more widespread testing for antibodies, which means they check your blood. And if you have antibodies to it, that means you've had it, but you may not have it anymore. And then we can identify people who are called convalescent, and they can maybe go. So to that point, not to do too much of a plug, but Columbia and some other places are doing a study where they can test patients who think they've had it or have had it and make sure that they don't have the virus anymore. They swab them, say, okay, you don't have virus anymore, but you have antibodies. And those people can then go to the New York Blood Center and donate plasma, which can then be used in a study to give to really sick people to try to shut down the disease. So there's a lot of hope in that respect.
So even if I haven't had any symptoms.
Yeah.
Actually, the funny thing is I have. But, you know, you cough once and you flip out now.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean?
True.
You know what I'm saying? You wake up and you feel a little achy and you go, oh, no, I'm old. It's okay. Yeah. But, like, but should everyone then get tested to see if – are we at the point yet where they can say you've had it, you're over it, go give blood because that can help someone who's really sick? Or are we not there yet?
Those things are being done under the guise and the auspices of a clinical trial. So there are certain criteria that are required to get you into that. And most of the time they want to confirm that you've at least symptomatically probably had the disease because there's limited resources to be able to test people for both. And so they want to try to make sure that the people that are coming in are probably going to turn out to have had it. I think down the road, it'll open up. And, you know, one of the funny things I've noticed is that when I talk to people outside of my world, I hear more stories about them having had it, mm-hmm. and they know having had it, than the people that are where they're swimming in it, you know, in the walls where I am. You know, I know most of us probably, or a lot of us have had it, but I hear about it a lot more on the outside.
Yeah. Well, do you think, again, is that the herd mentality where of, you know, being around it all the time might help you build up an immunity to it, or?
It may be that we're the walking well. A lot of us have had it and gone.
Yeah, you fought through it.
Yeah, but some there's no question. I don't want to minimize the numbers because a lot of healthcare workers have gotten really sick.
Yes.
But we have a smart system for protecting ourselves, and so I think you don't see a lot of people or anybody where I am sort of backing down from getting into the fight.
Right. So. And what do you have any take on this hydroxychloroquine? Or?
I think it's a great concept. And I do have a take on it in the sense that it's a drug's been around for a long time. It does have some significant side effects. And most
What are the side effects? I haven't heard much about side effects.
So the thing that's most dangerous is that the electrical conduction system of the heart can be impacted by it, and it can cause longer pauses, which can, in people who are susceptible, can just make your heart stop. Which obviously that's
okay.
That's game over. So
can't walk that one off.
Yeah. So there's some evidence, like in a test tube and on the petri dish, that it inhibits the virus. And it actually may calm down the inflammatory response. So it's being used, and it's being used in you know, freely in patients who may benefit from it. But as with anything, you need to collect data over time to see if it works. So unfortunately, the real answer will come after we're out of this. But I don't think it's wise to be at home taking it. I think one of the things that bothered me is a lot of people got their doctors to give them a prescription when they heard about it, and then now people that I know who have lupus, who use it for their lupus, they can't get it. So there's one thing I can tell people: if you want to see about treatments and studies and things like that, listen to Fauci. Okay, that's all you got to do. That's a very simple formula. That guy knows everything about this stuff, and he's the smartest.
You know, it's funny how you said that to me before. I saw Dr. Drew Pinsky on TV, and he said, follow Fauci. I saw Dr. Oz. He said, follow Fauci. What's his name? CNN, follow Fauci. And so I think that's really a great thing.
We're going to have to get pins made, double F.
Follow Fauci. But I think it's a great thing when you see doctors that I personally know and respect,
yeah.
You know, like Sanjay Gupta, that's who, and you, and every one of you, every one of you says, yeah, Fauci's the man, follow Fauci. So I think that's least we know we have the right person leading the way.
That guy, his biography, this guy, he drove the understanding of the AIDS epidemic. He was the guy that led that whole thing. Now, back in the early 80s, it took 3 years to identify the virus that caused AIDS. Can you imagine you think about how these guys, they go into the lab.
Wow.
They're not, no one goes to Fauci's Instagram page. Maybe they will now, but not before. Like, these guys aren't famous. They go and do their work, these men and women. And they go from the point where 30 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years to find the virus. This time it took like a month just because of the techniques that they developed. So he's the real deal. And it's great to have people like me on and people on television to talk and that kind of thing. But the bottom line is, if you had one resource, Tony Fauci.
Right. It is, but I think it is important to have guys like you coming on, because it allows people like me who don't know what's going on. I don't have time to try to follow everything because I have two little kids. What's that?
You have nothing going on. Stop drinking all day, Mark.
Well, I have to keep up the name of the show, and God knows you're not keeping your end of the bargain.
Mark makes a good point, though, where this is very frustrating. I'm speaking for you, Mark. This is very frustrating for all of us as performers right now, because any situation that we have ever been in, any catastrophe that has happened, there's always a show where we can raise money and we can do that. And this is the first time where we can't do that, or we're not in a great position. They're starting to come up with some things for online comedy, which I think is, and music, which I think will either work or it won't. But I think it's great that they're trying.
It'll be great for the viewer. It's going to suck for the artist.
Yeah, it's going to suck for the artist. You're right. But what can we do? What is there anything we can do that you guys need? Is there something to help you guys at this time when you're working all the time and I'm sitting at home going, I got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, we don't work when we're actually working.
We don't work.
So we need something to feel better about ourselves.
Basically, Mark and I have lost 45 minutes of our day. That's about it.
Well, everybody that I know says that. And I think one of the things I'm most proud of, at least people in my life, is that. And everybody, they're so dedicated to trying to make this better for the world. So, like, I have a instructor, a trainer that I work with, who's a really dear friend of mine. And she called me the other day. She's like, what can I do about this? How can I help? So I thought, I'm going to talk to the hospital and see if we can do like some streaming training sessions for the nurses and doctors who are doing the work, and try to find, just even like podcasts and that kind of thing, that she can provide motivation and training, physical training. Your guys obviously wouldn't do that, but
you don't want training from us.
But I think if you want to do like this, I don't know if you just speaking about it and letting people like us know that you really are concerned about us and want to help. I think that's terrific. There have been, you know, it's hard to tell people in this crisis to donate money because everyone's getting is looking at an economic downturn without a doubt. I mean, the economics of this in the future are going to be, I think, devastating. So I would prefer that people take their whatever their craft or their gift may be and figure out maybe a small way that they can help or provide some kind of comfort to even just a small number of people that are, you know, that are doing the work. And I think everybody's really doing the work emotionally. There's so many people that say, oh, I feel like I'm not doing anything. But trust me, we know that you're there, and just the expression of gratitude is worth it.
Well, thank you so much, Doc.
We don't know the expression of gratitude that we really have.
And thank you.
You guys,
Richie, you can do a workout video for us.
You guys are so true. You're true here. Hey, I've been walking 4 miles a day, my friend.
You see? This?
If we could get Richie in an all-gray sweatsuit doing yoga on camera, I think we would all be better.
And drinking. But Nick, you guys, it's, you know, our president keeps saying we're at war, and it's what we're watching.
You guys are the front lines, man.
Front line in our own homes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much a first for our country in over 200 years. So we couldn't have better people in the front line, Nick, I guess is what I'm saying. You're a great doctor. You're a great friend. We'd love to have you back.
Please
come back.
The only thing I would take a second and say, the one thing that really to me is most impactful, when it's bad, it's really bad. And I feel my heart breaks for these people that are going through this and their families. And I know you guys all get that. And I think that's really just the magnitude of it is really compelling. So we'll get to the other side. And you know, your guys doing this kind of stuff is extremely important. So I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you so much, Nick. We'll talk to you soon. We'll have you back soon, okay?
You got it.
Thank you very much. Give it up for Dr. Nicholas Marcy right there.
That was awesome, man.
How about us sounding smart?
I know. That's why I didn't say much.
You didn't say a word, man. Was I prepared?
You were.
I was good.
Buddy, I'm so proud of you.
All right.
I feel like you just hit a home run and daddy's in the stands clapping. That's my boy. That's my boy.
I think we need to dumb it down a little bit. And I can't think of two people better to dumb the show down.
I got good news and I got bad news. The good news is we're already dumb as you can get. The bad news is Wildcard dropped out. He was online. So we're going to bring out Joel. And
really?
Then, if the Wildcard can get back on, we'll have him on. But Joel, why don't you come back out, baby?
Yeah, the wild card has some firewall issues because he keeps going on the VPN.
Whoa, there he is!
There he is, ladies and gentlemen. The one and the only Mr. Joe Richardson.
From Ground Zero.
My fellow American.
Look at you. Look at you. Dude, can I ask you something? You've been eating any bats lately, you son of a bitch? You've been eating some bats?
Yeah.
I noticed.
Asshole. Are you kidding me?
That's good. Wear a mask while you do this so no one can understand a fucking word you say it. That's great.
You know my son's pissed off. His favorite superhero is Batman. He is really pissed off someone's eating bats.
I have a video I can send you guys of the guys up in Wuhan eating bat soup.
Ooh. Right.
And the guy's talking in Chinese, and he's explaining that you should cut the head off first before you eat the bat.
I got to say, so here's something that made me, I was going to say in front of the doc, but it was one of those things where I didn't want to look like an idiot. In the book, I Am Legend, the reason that guy survived this outbreak was he was bit by a bat in Korea that was infected by the disease that killed everyone else. So he was immune to it, and he was the reason. Is there any correlation? Is there?
Yo, when did you go back to China?
November.
Uh-huh. And when did the virus hit in China?
December.
When did you serve that bat soup to those people?
I think it's a social disease, my friend.
It hit in December. Okay, a doctor in Wuhan found the virus in December, but the Chinese government, and you know, and I could be blocked out at any time for talking about this, guys, just to let you know. Yeah, it's I'm going through the Chinese firewall, and if they don't like what I'm doing, I'm gone. So the doctor found the virus, but they covered it up. They totally covered it up. And right. if they would have addressed it at that point in time, there would have been far less contamination across the board than
well, I'm sure you're going to be cut off any moment.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, you went right for the jugular. You didn't even buy the Chinese government dinner.
No, hey, it's a Chinese virus, right?
He's busy fingering turkeys.
I'll be on the phone with my dad, and he'll say those words: China, communist, business. He'll get cut off, and then call me back and explain again why he just got cut off, and then say the words and get cut off again.
And that is why you are the wild card.
So, Joe, where are you in China?
I'm in Shenzhen, China, which is the southernmost city in China. If you go across the border, you're in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right. And how are things there?
They're starting, you know, this past week, they've really started to lighten up, most of the shops that have survived this time are starting to open. The grocery stores are open. A lot of the restaurants are starting to open. They're allowing more social interaction between, you know, crowds, you know, in the community. So
bat soup is on sale.
What's that?
Bat soup is on sale.
No, bat soup's been taken off the menu.
I imagine it would be cheap as hell now.
Are they still limiting people in, like, restaurants and things like that, like we're talking about doing here?
No.
Are a lot of people still wearing masks and things?
Everybody wears a mask that's outside.
Do they have to, or they just do?
It's voluntary. It's
voluntary, but everybody's doing it.
But if you don't have one off, you get the Chinese stare.
Right.
And the thing is that everybody talks about being quarantined here, but my dad actually had been quarantined over there. No social interaction, no visitors, none of his friends, by himself, 60 days.
Really?
Right?
Yeah.
Did you at least have
let me tell you, it was not a good time.
No. Richie, whatever the end of that sentence was,
I still have the calluses.
You know what's funny? I said, did you have a little something, something? And that could mean like five different things with Joe.
I'm going to just say right now, at the end of those 60 days, there was a small volcano that went off in China.
Yeah, and the lights came on. Boom.
Oh, my God.
But he said all the places came back open. When they did open, it was full throttle. So although they've taken a little bit of time to come back open, when they did, it was full capacity.
Did they have trouble? How can I put – did the government help out small businesses like they're talking about doing here?
Yes, they did. Yes.
Uh-huh. And you have a business out there that was
– I am a USA-based business.
Right. And you guys were completely shut down.
Completely shut down. Majority of the factories are at about 70% right now capacity.
And are you, and you're back up running?
I'm back up running, yeah.
Okay, good. Thank God. Yeah.
I went to a city that's about an hour away the past 2 days to do a project for one of the large retailers in the United States. We're making a silicone condom for over top of the credit card machines.
There was probably some other ways to explain that. Thank you, Dad.
Your words, not mine.
Did you see his?
I don't mind being in the condom business. Are you kidding me?
Oh, God.
All right, guys. Yeah. We're hitting the 40.
Dr. Nick at this point.
We're hitting the 40 mark, so we should start to wind down. we should start winding down. It's
you were pretty much by yourself for 60 days.
Correct.
Pretty much.
The first two weeks were the scariest for me because, you know, I mean, I wasn't prepared for it. So I didn't have you don't have large refrigerators here and pantries here like you have in the United States. Mm-hmm. So you don't stockpile a lot of food. You go to the grocery store every day or every 2 days, you know, to buy fresh food, you know, for your meals and everything. So I wasn't prepared for this lockdown. So after about a week, I had to go out to the grocery store to get food and water, and because you don't drink the tap water here because you'll grow a third eye. So I went to the grocery store. There was very few people in the grocery store, and there was no fresh food. There was nothing on the shelf.
Really? Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't until about the third or fourth week into this virus that the store started to get resupplied with fresh vegetables and fresh meats and everything.
So I guess a major question to ask you is, when you go to the bathroom at your apartment, is it Western style?
It is Western style. I do not do a squatty potty, no.
So you still had to stock up on the paper. Were you good?
Paper was never a problem here.
Okay, it's an American thing.
You know, yeah, but you know why? Because
we're assholes.
No, they didn't see right, but they didn't see it coming. As far as once we saw what was happening in China and then really Italy, everybody freaked out and ran to the store and bought toilet paper. It's the strangest thing to me, but
if you guys need a couple containers of toilet paper, I'd be happy to help you out. You know.
Listen, I don't want to brag here, but I didn't even know there was going to be an issue. We still haven't had to go out and buy toilet paper.
Yeah, we did prepare though.
My house has always has about 4 months supply at all times, way before there was any kind of issue.
It's a pinch. It's just amazing that he has no connectivity issues whenever that happens.
It's standard here. I mean, they use very, very little toilet paper here.
All right, let's move on.
Why? Our numbers finally went up.
This is a standard issue right here. One sheet. That's it. That's what you get. One sheet.
What are you drinking there, Joseph?
I'm drinking tea from Yunnan.
Okay.
Tea. What kind of tea you got?
It's Yunnan tea from Yunnan, from the province of Yunnan.
What?
Yeah.
And what time is it there?
It is, I don't know, 8:40 in the morning.
Oh, you're 12 hours ahead of us.
Correct.
So here's a good dad joke for us since we didn't have a guest do a joke. You know what kind of tea I have?
What kind?
MT. Richie, I'm going to start writing for you for the joke of the day.
The market for 3 weeks and it has nothing to do with the virus. So, Joe, what do you think is going to happen here? You think we'll be stuck in here for 2 months? You think it'll be? We're already 3 weeks into this quarantine.
I think it really depends on the population. It depends on the people. It depends on how serious the population takes the virus and how they handle the preventive, you know, part of the virus. I mean, I don't see that, you know, we're getting requests for masks by the millions. I mean,
yeah,
but I don't see anybody wearing them. I see people, I see people in the street, and I don't see anybody wearing a mask.
In America?
Yeah, it's rare. No.
I see a lot of people with masks. Now, yeah.
But that's because you're in an insane asylum.
But I will tell you that. And did we lose him?
No, he's still there.
Okay, I thought maybe the American government. I will tell you that when this all first started.
Nice. He's still there.
When this all first started, they were saying the masks don't help. That you need a specific kind of mask. The masks don't really help. Now they're saying wear a mask, a scarf, whatever you have. And they're saying, well, it won't help you. It won't keep it from you getting it. But if you have it, it will help prevent the spread of it. And
correct.
I don't know how true that is, but that's what they're saying now. You know,
the mask, if you sneeze or if you cough and you know, it comes out of your mouth. Okay. And if you're close to somebody else, it goes on them. Even if it goes on their hand and if they touch their eye or they touch their mouth, they get it.
Yeah.
So the mask catches those particles of the virus and keeps it from being spread. You know, 4 billion people wouldn't be wearing masks if it didn't work.
Well, I have a theory.
I can't wait to hear that.
I have a theory after you, Richie.
I think that it's a way, and I'm not knocking the government for doing this, but it's a way to make us feel like we're involved in some way. We're all sitting home, losing our minds. What can I do? Wear a mask. It'll make you feel you're helping the situation if you wear a mask. I don't know how much. It's just my opinion.
I thought you were going to say getting people to make masks we're going to do that Rosie the Riveter.
I think we need masks. I think obviously they need them in the hospitals. I'm just saying the general public, just stay away from each other. It's that simple. Then you won't need a mask.
Oh, yeah. Stay at home until this whole thing is over. I mean, I don't have to say this, but stay at home. And if you do have to go out, you know, to get food or get, you know, some supply, whatever, wear a mask. Wear some type of
protective. I understand, but I do worry that people go, no, I wore a mask. It's okay. It's not okay. Stay home. Stay home.
Yeah, right.
And we will be over. We lost Joe until the show just got better.
Well, he's back.
It's back.
Wow, your father did some shitty things about you while you were gone, man.
Well, I was going to say it's amazing that when the wild card's over in China, the longer he's there, the slower he talks to English, even though it's our first language. He talks to us slower and with words missing.
That's just because he thinks we're dumb.
Well, no. Listen.
I think the word "think" is the wrong one. He knows we're dumb.
No. You get used to. There's a lot of words in the English language that are not in the Chinese vocabulary. Okay, mm-hmm. So you get used to using, you know, and talking a certain way here, so people understand you.
Well, I know there's three in the English language that aren't in the Chinese vocabulary, and that's "don't eat bats."
Wild card, have you ever eaten a bat?
No.
Be honest.
Wild cards ain't worse than a bat.
I did eat some petrified eggs last night for dinner.
Did you really?
What's that taste like?
What? Why were they scared?
They're black.
Fucking Amelia Bedelia burn.
Yeah. Why were they petrified? What were they scared of?
They bury them for like 30 days in the ground, uncooked, and they literally rot.
That smells like something I did last night.
And you're in your apartment now, Joe?
I am. Yes.
Is that your window? Is that a window? Can you?
That's my door. It's my door to my patio.
Oh, okay. Because it looks nice. Is it a nice day out there?
It's a little overcast, but it's okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It blows my mind that it's, you know, 8:46 here. I just always think that's amazing.
They don't spring ahead. They stay the same time. We change time. So
we don't change.
Right. But we don't change time by 12 hours. So,
bro, when you guys do the time change, it becomes 13 hours difference.
Right.
Here and there.
Must be hard to figure out.
Well, wild card, we appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We should probably wrap here. We're at 50. You guys have been awesome. Wild card, the doc, you guys, that's Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.